Hi, and welcome to Being Lutheran, a podcast dedicated to proclaiming the excellencies of Jesus Christ and the biblical theology expressed in the Lutheran Confessions. Today, Pastor Jason Goodham, Pastor Brett Bowe, and Pastor Anna Mosier continue their discussion on the Formula of Concord, looking at Article 3 on the righteousness of faith before God. The Free Lutheran Bible College and Seminary is hosting its annual Summer Institute of Theology lecture event. It happens on the first full week of August. This year's instructor lineup includes Brad Pribinow teaching on praying the Psalms, Sam Wellemson on law and gospel preaching, the Free Lutheran Bible College faculty on various topics related to practical theology and ministry. To register, visit flbc.edu/SIT. Hope to see you there.
Welcome to the Being Lutheran podcast. I am Pastor Brett Bowe, and I'm joined by
Pastor Jason Goodham
and Pastor Adam Osier.
All right, welcome back, guys. We're back in the saddle and looking at the formula again, Article 3.
Yeah, it's been a busy couple months for us. We recorded plenty ahead of time. AFLC had its annual conference, and then we had our every other year. Is that biannual or semi-annual? I forget.
It's biannual.
Youth convention, the National Youth Convention, but we are back in the studio.
Yes.
Bringing you more confessional Lutheran theology.
Yeah.
Felt like
good.
A big city DJ from the 70s.
It kind of sounded like that. Yeah. Hi, Adam.
Hi, Brett. How are you?
Tired. Still tired.
We're sitting here today in a newly renovated recording studio, and next to us is this TV, which is posting on the TV, is the front page, or what is a landing page of our Being Lutheran website. And so we're looking at ourselves. It's a little disconcerting. I've been distracted by that ever since we started talking.
There is no better reason to not have video on this podcast than our faces.
Yeah, we were talking about that. One of the things, you know, like video podcasts are all the rage right now. We wouldn't survive it, I don't think. We're not there. We're old school. And plus Jason's face.
There's a case to be made for natural selection, and that's it.
That's
my face.
I think you guys are, no, I don't agree.
Brett is a pure-hearted soul. People would want to look at you, Brett. I know they would. Brett's a pure-hearted guy.
Brett, you're like a walking, talking Eighth Commandment.
Eighth
Commandment?
When we say that Brett is pure-hearted, you would see why if we were on video. Okay. I like that.
Yeah.
I really like that.
Sure.
It's a man who looks like he's always 17.
Okay.
And pure.
Pure.
Got it.
Yeah.
That's probably why. Oh, anyway. Okay.
That's one of my favorite things about this podcast is flustering Brett by pointing out his own righteousness.
Yeah. Speaking of righteousness,
that
was a segue.
Good segue.
It was on purpose.
Hi-oh.
It was on purpose.
Yeah, we're on Article 3 of the formula, and it is the righteousness of faith before God. And I think without further ado, although it is fun to banter with you guys, I was looking forward to that today. Let's read the paragraph, unless Jason has...
Well, do we want to explain our unusual roadmap first
while
we're handling this?
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I was hoping you would do it, but I can do it. this topic is so big. This will be, rather than our four-episode arc, this will be an eight-part episode.
Right.
We're going to do four episodes on the article and then four Bible studies to correspond with it. It's just such a massive deal. Maybe the most important article in the formula.
There's just so many Bible studies you could do from this, though.
I mean,
from the New Testament, old and new, right? You've got some from Jeremiah, some from there's a lot of things in the Old Testament too. But I mean, honestly, you could spend eight episodes in the New Testament and do in-depth dives into many passages that really highlight the truth of what this article is saying.
Yep.
Right. All right, I will read the start of the article, and as always, we encourage you to read through the entirety of the article in the Book of Concord, but we're on Article 3 in the formula, the righteousness of faith before God, the question at issue, and here it launches into it. It says, "It is a unanimous confession of our churches, according to the Word of God and the content of the Augsburg Confession, that we poor sinners are justified before God and saved solely by faith in Christ, so that Christ alone is our righteousness. He is truly God and man, since in him the divine and human natures are personally united to one another. Because of the foregoing, a question has arisen, according to which Which nature is Christ our righteousness? Two false and mutually contradictory teachings have invaded some churches. One party has held that Christ is our righteousness only according to his Godhead. When he dwells in us by faith, over against this indwelling Godhead, the sins of all men are esteemed like a drop of water over against the immense ocean. Beautiful metaphor. Others, however, held that Christ is our righteousness before God only according to the human nature. All right, that's the end of the kind of opening paragraphs of the article. And so, yeah, the question is introduced there. And I think it kind of jives well with just as we were talking in a number of recent episodes about original sin and so on. But jumping into this question of... is Christ our righteousness according to which of his natures?
Yep. And just as a side, what you brought up is a good time to highlight this again. As much as the content of the Book of Concord and the various confessional documents in the Book of Concord is primary and excellent, the flow of those documents, the logical organization of those documents is really underappreciated, that they are intended to deliver almost a theological narrative, if you follow them in consequential order, you know.
Yeah, that's good to pick up on that. Yeah.
Say that again, Jason.
So each one of the documents, the Augsburg Confession and the Apology, which go hand in hand.
Right.
Luther's small called article, though Luther wasn't a systematician like Melanchthon was, but the catechisms do this. But especially the formula. Article one is an article for a reason. And then Article 2 flows out of Article 1, Article 3 flows out of Article 2, and we keep building, and the structure of the documents, like I said, almost works as a theological narrative.
Sure. And I missed that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I almost wonder if
trajectory you're talking about.
I imagine them having like a bunch of topics written on note cards and like on the table and piecing them together in that
way. Well, it's very much a flow chart, which I think if you understand that and you recognize it, what it does is like, okay, let's go all the way down to election.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you guys, people just don't screw up election. You know, you don't lockstep up to election is, okay, we don't agree on election. Why? And you back up until you find the point on that chain that broke.
Or you diverge from the other. Yeah,
exactly.
Each other. Yeah.
And so it's, you know, later what we're going to do is we're going to get to the mode of Christ's presence in the Lord's Supper. And so the article on the Lord's Supper and the article on the humanity, divinity of Christ are back to back for that very reason.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, interesting. Yeah, so in this article, I suppose there are certain options to this. You know, is Christ our righteousness according to his divine nature? Is Christ our righteousness only according to his human nature or thereabouts? I suppose, would that be the only combinations there?
Well, there's three combinations.
Neither, both.
Four. Yeah. Neither, one or the other, or both. And the argument of Chemnitz and Andreae in the formula is Christ is our righteousness, but Christ needs to be our righteousness according to both natures. If Christ is only our righteousness according to one nature or the other nature, you lose the whole program.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, Adam, we were kind of talking off air, you mentioned this, why is that important? And it's just, there are several categories of heresy or false teaching that are impacted by losing the two natures of Christ.
Mm-hmm. If we were to kind of summarize those, maybe in this episode we can kind of summarize and then we'll probably unpack them, but if we were to kind of give like a collapsed down summary of all that, what would that be for each of those categories?
Okay, so if you lose the human nature of Christ...
righteousness according to his human nature.
Righteousness according to his human
nature. That's what the text says. And that's the part that could be confusing. According to the divine nature makes sense, and it's actually explained in this article that Brett read, or the part of the article that Brett read. But according to the human nature, what does that look like? Righteousness. If our righteousness was only according to Christ's human nature, Go Jason.
That's how you end up with Mormonism and Jehovah's Witnesses, that Christ is a created being. He is the highest created being, but he is not on the same plane as the Father. And those are the heresies of Mormonism and Jehovah's Witness. And that's important to...
Does it... Sorry, I'm going to pause you there. Does that kind of boiled down to Christ than just simply being a good example.
It's exactly what it
is. So our righteousness really is only looking to him then. If it was only according, if our righteousness came from before God, only came through the human nature of Christ, it would be as saying we are merely looking to a good example. We can live like him.
See, this guy did it. Yeah. You can do it too.
Sure.
You know, Zig Ziglar.
Well, and then the divine nature makes more sense. Yeah. Right? Because the divine nature, if the righteousness is according to that, that's where we kind of get into that heresy of infused versus imputed righteousness. Like this idea that Jesus is, you know, he comes to us in his deity, or his God form, his godly nature. He comes to us, and his goodness so overwhelms our person that is all we do now, is live according to the power of Christ living in us, so much so that our old, you know, the things that cling to us, and there's some good text we're going to get into later about that, but our, it just like drops in the ocean, right? Yeah. So insignificant that it doesn't matter. But that steals from the reality of what true righteousness is. It's that whole, would you eat a brownie if there was just an itty-bitty dog turd in it?
Yeah, you know? Or even more than that is how many drops of arsenic are you willing to risk to eat a brownie?
Depends on how good the brownie is. I mean, there have been some brownies I would hit a few drops, but yeah, I'll take my chances. No, Brett?
No.
Sorry.
I don't think so. Yeah.
Brett wouldn't because he's pure. Yeah. Pure-hearted.
Let's stop it.
I don't know where to go from there.
Yeah. Yeah. So that, but I'm just trying to frame it up, right? Yeah. We're trying to frame up the argument. Yeah. Why is this such a big deal? They wrote about it 1,500. There's some, or not 1,500 years ago, wrote about it like 500 years ago-ish.
In the 1500s.
Less. Yeah. Thanks, Jason.
That's where you're going.
Gosh, you're brilliant today.
Mathy.
And the
I was told there would be no math.
Yeah.
I don't even know where I'm going. We're just ruining each other right now. But all this to say is, why does that argument made by Chemnitz and Andreae 500 years ago, why is it a big deal? You know, why is this still a matter of time? And how did they frame up this argument? Because it is. It turns out to be in the argument of the systematic approach they're taking here. It turns out to be a pretty big deal.
Yeah.
In the text.
And the argument is both what you lose when you lose one of the natures, and where you're heading. Mm-hmm. Right? And so, without either one of the natures, you lose salvation unequivocally, according to Scripture. If we're not righteous according to Christ's human nature, if Christ is not human, he can't be a substitute. God cannot accept him as our substitute. And and the big idea here, and you know, we've touched on this several times, but the big idea here is that God's grace and mercy need to also be consistent with his justice. Mm-hmm. God can't stop being just for the sake of grace and mercy, otherwise he's inconsistent, and then he can't be God. Mm-hmm. And so Jesus needs to be able to take our place. Bulls and goats can't take our place. Someone who is God only can't take it, because it's a different quality. Mm-hmm. So Jesus needs to take our place. If Jesus is only human, if that's all he is, like Mormons, Jehovah's Witnesses, various other anti-Trinitarian heresies, if Jesus is only human, then he dies for his own sin. Mm-hmm. He has to be the God who is man and the man who is God. He has to have a completely perfect divine nature so that when he dies, not only do we know he's dying for someone else, but he can also conquer death and rise again.
Yeah. Yep.
And so both of those are at stake. I think along, you know, like we're setting ourselves up for a couple episodes on the line, I think along these lines, the bigger question, and they do really well in the formula, is what is righteousness? Hmm. Why is this the talking point? Mm-hmm. And for far too many churches, I don't think they actually consider the answer to that question.
Hmm.
What does it mean? You know, how are we righteous before God? What does it mean to be righteous? I think for far too many Christian denominations, righteousness is merely a moral category.
Yeah.
And and that's a problem. Okay, so
moral category meaning?
So if it's only moral, if it's only like you...
Your righteous deeds.
Yeah, you obeyed the law. If it's only moral,
your morality.
Yeah. If it's only your morality, righteousness can only ever be performative. Mm-hmm. It's simply a matter of correcting our obedience.
Sure.
As opposed to it being a standing.
So this is a Joel Bierman thing. And when I learned this from Joel Bierman, Case for Character is where he lays this out. This is one of his foundational teachings, and it reordered everything in my mind.
Yeah.
An easier definition for righteousness is to be rightly oriented. And when you're rightly oriented to whatever it is you're being compared to or have a relationship with or however you want to talk about, and this isn't like a relationship like, oh, we're dating now. This is like, I relate to this entity, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Then is like, how are you rightly oriented? We have a righteousness before God, and the question is, how? We have a righteousness before our neighbor, and the answer is, how?
Yeah.
Or the definition is, how are we righteous before our neighbor? And that's probably where we need to spend the rest of our time talking, is what is righteousness and why does it matter?
Yeah, that Bierman example that you give is expressed in it with flame, right? 2KR?
2KR, two kinds of righteousness.
Two kinds of righteousness. And the way that Bierman, we should just have Bierman on here because he could describe it himself. But it's this idea of like a horizontal line and a vertical line, right? And that standing before God is a vertical line. And I like to draw it with an arrow coming down. Yep. And at the nexus of those two lines for the Christian is where the Christian is. Like the
that
righteousness.
Inverted T.
Yeah, inverted T. Right at the nexus of that. That's where the Christian is. And the righteousness that's coming down to the believer is the standing before God. That is not performative in our sense. I guess it's performative by Christ, but it's not performative or moral in nature. It's a relational thing. We are declared righteous before God. And then the horizontal line is our relationship to neighbor. It is our performative righteousness in our vocations. It's doing the right thing to our neighbor at the right time.
And that's where we want it to be performative because we are righteous before our neighbor through our good works.
Yep.
And actually, the way I teach this in my systematic classes is it's kind of a hybrid version of the three kinds of righteousness. And so we've got the two kinds of righteousness with, again, Bierman highlights this really well, and it's absolutely 100% correct. But understanding how that 2KR diagram works helps you understand this other problem that people have, and it's what happens when unbelievers appear righteous, morally upright. And this is where we get into that Gandhi quote that you make fun of me that comes from Rob Bell.
And, you know, oh, boy.
Rob Bell's indignant thing is, what do we do about Gandhi?
Yeah. And then in Bierman's, his paradigm, right, there is a line that is not connected. It's not an upside-down T. It's below that.
Yeah.
And it's the, yes, there are people who do morally correct things that are not connected, do not have a right standing before their creator. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, that is definitely something we see, but that is not righteousness that brings relationship. That is it's not righteousness that brings relationship before God.
Right.
It's righteousness to neighbor, for sure. And an example, just a simple example, right? I use with my students, a Hindu doctor, you know, or an atheist doctor who is a good doctor and doing what they ought to be doing as a doctor is doing right things. They are living righteously in a sense, but that righteousness does not extend to the Almighty. It just extends to one's neighbor before whom righteousness is not eternally significant.
Yeah, and so I label that perceived righteousness.
Mm-hmm.
It's an appearance. And there are only two answers for how we handle perceived righteousness. The first is we celebrate, the Reformed would call it common grace. It would also be a category of natural law. When creation works in the way God intends it to work, it's a good thing. Right? So when an unbeliever loves and serves his neighbor as a neighbor, it's a good thing. That's why I don't need the farmer who harvests my grain to be a Christian.
Remember those Christian directory books back in the day?
Yeah. And if you want to support Christians, that's
that was a thing?
Oh, yeah, totally.
Seriously.
You didn't know about that?
No.
Businesses that were owned by Christians?
The
So it's like the opposite version of like the, you know, the LGBTQ friendly businesses or the women owned or the black owned businesses. I didn't know that happened. Yeah. How did I miss that?
They look like old phone books.
Yeah,
I imagine it would look pretty ancient if the Christians were doing it. Yeah.
Christian Business Directory. Yes. Minneapolis had that for years and years.
Wow. I never heard of this. Okay, anyway, sorry. Sorry I blew up.
The reason why I don't need the farmer who harvests the grain that turns into my bread to be a Christian is because of this, like I said, the Reformed category have common grace.
Is there a Lutheran term for that besides common grace?
Natural law.
Yeah.
God works through creation. It's a first article of the creed blessing.
Yeah.
And God hides himself in the good works of our neighbor to accomplish what he promises in the fourth petition of the Lord's Prayer.
Hmm. Yeah.
You know, so God promises daily bread. We trust him to provide daily bread. God provides daily bread in whatever means he wants to because he's God.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that's the first half of understanding perceived righteousness. The second half is the theological way in which you remember it's not righteous at all.
Right? Or it's like filthy rags.
It's like filthy rags. It's anything done apart from faith is sin. What's that? Romans 14, right?
Yep.
Anything done apart from faith is sin. You can do something the law requires. You do not get credit for that because you are an unforgiven sinner. And so it's not actually righteousness.
Mm-hmm.
No one who... there's so many negatives in the way I was going to say that.
Triple negative.
A person who is not covered in the blood of Christ is not actually capable of being rightly oriented.
Right.
And that's the principle at play.
Yeah. And that's the title of the article, Before God.
Yep.
Righteousness before God or before the face of
God. Especially before God, but even before neighbor. You are not capable of being rightly oriented to your neighbor unless you are washed in the blood of Christ.
Correct, yeah.
Because that's where it goes back to the catechism stuff we've talked about, is if you do not have the assurance of salvation by the blood of Christ, you will always, only, and ever be in competition with your neighbor because of your good works, either in your mind before God or in your mind just, you know, like, well, at least I'm better than that guy.
On the episode of The Office where Dwight and Andy are fighting over helping one another and holding the door. No, after you, never leave a good deed unpaid or whatever. Yeah.
That's exactly the story. Or like, there's this Jim Gaffigan routine about McDonald's. And it's where one guy runs into another guy at McDonald's. And he's like, oh, you eat at McDonald's? I didn't know I was better than you. And look, you're both at McDonald's kind of a thing. You know, that sort of a thing. It's without the blood of Christ.
Hypocrisy.
Yeah. You're always putting yourself in competition with your neighbor for your good works so that you look better.
Right.
And you get the praise of men, or you hope that you get, you know, in on the curve that, okay, God's only accepting C pluses into heaven right now.
Sure.
That sort of a thing. And so both are true. According to natural law, the first article of the creed, the fourth petition of the Lord's Prayer, common grace, whatever your category, we praise God that creation works the way he designed it to work, even in a sinful system, right? Mm-hmm. A sin-tainted system. At the same time, that the eternal thing, what you said at the end of your last bit there.
And I winced a little bit because there's nuance to that.
There's nuance that with an eternal perspective, those good deeds done by an unbeliever count for nothing.
Yeah. I would take time to invite the listener to listen to 2KR by Flame.
Yep.
Call on 2KR.
Wherever you hear.
Friend of the show.
To your, to your music. Like Apple Music, Spotify.
On your iPod.
On your iPods, yes. If you have your mobile MP3 players
CDs.
Somewhere. No, it's a good, just concise way of looking at what we're talking about today.
Yeah, Flame did in 3 minutes what we just did poorly in 23 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Flame.
Thank you for joining us. Please look us up on the web at beinglutheran.com. Also, invite a friend to check us out on Spotify and iTunes. Please join us next week as Pastor Jason, Pastor Brett, and Pastor Adam continue their discussion on the Formula of Concord. If you would like more information on the Bible School or the seminary, please visit flbc.edu. God bless you and have a great week.